Welcome to UMES 30. I'm Brian Daniels. UMES 30 is a half-hour talk show featuring conversations with guests from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore, the local community, and from around the nation. We cover a wide variety of topics that are of interest to you. Climate change has been on the radar for a number of decades, often sparking debates among scientists, politicians, and just about everybody in everyday life. Now, the science suggests that melting ice caps, rising sea levels, the increasing severity of storms, and the frequency of storms are all a result of a rapidly changing global climate. With all that's been happening, some might wonder what we as individuals can do to stem the tide of climate change. Here to give us an insight on some of the simple things we can do in our own neck of the woods is author and artist Dana Simpson. Dana is a lifelong environmentalist and climate change activist. She is the writer and illustrator of 14 books. Her latest book, Come Together, Handbook to Retool for the Future, offers an easy-to-understand guide to taking proactive steps to saving our planet. Dana, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Now, you're actually from this area, is that correct?
Absolutely.
Give us an idea of the type of environment that you live in.
Well, I'm really lucky to live right on the Chesapeake Bay on a little island. It's sort of a point that there's marsh, a road winds out through the marsh to get to the island. And so sometimes we're kind of on the front line of climate change because that road will go under with king tides.
Oh.
And also saltwater encroachment is actually coming in so quickly that we've lost some trees. Mm. And I now have to collect rainwater to water my garden.
So how long have you been a climate change activist?
You know, it's really funny. Back in the 70s, there was this whole ecology movement, and I was a kid, and we used to actually play, instead of, you know, cowboys and Indians or cops and robbers or something like that, we played, forgive me, but we played climate change activist and large corporation, and we it was funny. And
so how did that go? I mean, what was the premise?
Well, do you remember there was a fantastic commercial where it showed in the 70s rivers were actually catching on fire.
Okay.
There was terrible pollution and there was a really big awareness of ecology and people were mindful of it. There was a recession. People were watching how much they drove. They'd carpool. Mm-hmm. My dad would, you know, not let us leave the room unless we turned the lights off. And so we were very, very aware of all of this. And there was a wonderful commercial that had an Indian.
Right.
He had
the single tear coming down
his
cheek.
And how profound was that? Everyone remembers that advertisement. And it's true. You know, we kind of have been not treating Mother Earth very kindly.
Mm.
And we all should weep a little, you know, thinking about it. And I think we do. And people want to be empowered to do the right thing. And that's kind of why I decided to write the book, to give people ways, just step by step, because it's just one step after the other,
mm-hmm.
kind of being mindful and getting back to actually a lot of the things that we were already doing.
Mm-hmm.
We've just slipped off into a number of bad habits.
Okay, so it sounds like you've had a very, very early start into all this. And so I guess kind of my next question is, what really made you pay attention to the environment and the role that climate change has played?
Well, I guess I really love nature
mm-hmm.
and all living things. And I feel deeply that we should, you know, walk lightly on the planet and not overstep. You know, so therefore other animals need to have their spaces. We shouldn't litter it. And, you know, I always felt this way and mm-hmm. tried to conduct myself in a manner that was respectful
right. okay.
of the earth.
So now, as you well know, there's kind of a lot of debate swirling around these days about climate change. And in your opinion, why do you think that some people seem to get it and others don't?
You know what I think that is? I think that's fear.
Hmm.
Because we've never faced something so large and also intangible. It's out there, sort of like a sense of doom. You know, they call it an existential threat.
Mm-hmm.
And people immediately feel futile or what can I possibly do? It's so big. Or we've already gone past the tipping point or any of this stuff. And so I think that people get frozen And rather than, sometimes when people are frozen in fear, they react negatively, they stick their hands in the sand, they don't want to hear it, they don't want to listen, it makes them uncomfortable. But the minute you get empowered and you start doing something, you know, it feels so good. And it's extremely therapeutic. It's sort of like people, you know, when you walk by homeless people, some people get real edgy because they feel bad. They want to do something. They don't know what to do. Well, you know, you go and you work at a soup kitchen and you're kind to people, or, you know, you even if you smile at them and say, hey, how you doing? It's a whole different energy that happens then because you're acknowledging the issue and you're addressing it in a positive way.
Right. So do you find it challenging to challenge other people's notions about what climate change is or isn't?
Well, the little subtitle on the book is, it says, a movement of one. And usually, you know, you think of movements, big crowds of people.
Sure.
You know, and you do hope that this will evolve to that. But bottom line, it starts with me. It starts with you. It starts with each of us and what we do. So it's not necessarily... you know, that I'm going to try to corral people into doing what I'm doing. I'm just going to do it. And it's funny, you know, when I take my market bags to the grocery store, over to the food line here, you know, people kind of stop and they like it. They say, oh, I got to remember to do that. You know, and I say to the cashier, because, you know, she's all ready to get the plastic bags.
Right.
And I'm like, no, here, I'll just bag for you. No worries. She's like, yeah, that's cool. You know, so you just sort of start leading quietly by example. That goes a long way. And I will say, I was just in Annapolis because, yes, my book is about bottom-up change.
Uh-huh.
But top-down legislation is always pretty cool and also very cool. And I went to Lobby Day and went around and spoke to all of my delegates with actually the Sierra Club. And it was so educational. And, you know, and if you are concerned about a topic, you can go to Annapolis and you can make an appointment and you can speak to the people who are making the legislation. And they actually say if 10 people will write a letter or show up, that means that hundreds of people feel this way.
Mm.
And so you do make a difference when you do things like that.
Well, that's something that a lot of people should keep in mind, because I know that for many people, you know, the issue of climate change as well as other things, you know, just seems so big that, you know, the thought might be, well, you know, I'm just one person and, I don't know how I can affect this, you know. And so basically what you're saying, this goes across all levels, whether it's socioeconomic, whatever neighborhood you live in, doesn't matter. You know, just one person speaking up, or even just a few people speaking up, can pretty much start to affect change.
Absolutely.
Do you think that the issue of climate change has become too politicized?
I'm kind of one of those not liking to join clubs people. And I think anytime groups of people want to think one way or another, it just starts slowing the whole process down.
Mm.
So if we feel a certain way, the beauty is with this, because we are in the position we're in right now because of the purchases we individually make.
Sure.
And how we conduct ourselves during the day, each and every one of us. You know, you grab a plastic water bottle or you grab your, I don't know what you call these cups, but I love these, and you can put ice cubes in it.
Sure.
And it stays cold all day. You know, and so it's just the different, your actions will define that. And then politics will follow. So right now, we've just got this divisive atmosphere and things, everything is just kind of at a roadblock. Mm-hmm. And that's not productive for anybody.
Just getting back to your book, I know that you're also, as well as an author, you're an illustrator. You're an artist in general, period. You know, and tell me how you being an artist kind of plays into the way you've written this book.
All right. I love it that you asked me that question. Really what spurred this book into being, there's a book called Drawdown that a wonderful fellow named Paul Hawken kind of wrote with a number of different scholars and inventors and movers and shakers internationally. Mm-hmm. So they decided to go around politics in order to start to make cohesive change. You know, I call it global warming plastics,
okay.
Right? The way we farm, our food, how it's transported. And this is a huge kind of global warming encompasses a whole lot of different areas where we could do it a little better,
okay.
a little more sustainable. So I drove over to Loyola University on the Western Shore.
Okay.
And he was giving a talk at the college, and we went to listen to him, and it was very informative and really inspiring. But I thought, man, what can I do?
Mm.
I mean, I want to help. I want to do something useful. And so he had a question and answer period, and I was the last questioner.
Okay.
And I said, you know, I really want to help. I want to do something. What can people, you know, like just regular folks, how can we help with mm-hmm. with the movement? And he looked at me and he goes, well, you know, I don't know you, Dana, but I'm sure you'll think of something. And at first I was like, But then I thought, you know what? He's right. I've got to look at my skill set
mm-hmm.
as an illustrator and author. Well, heck yeah, I'll write a book. So I began researching, and it took me about a year and a half. And the deeper I went into this subject, the more intriguing it was, because it's not just about climate and the whole science.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually about, let's see how to say it, capitalism and convenience and mm-hmm. whether it really is convenience or if it is a profit motive for a company.
Okay.
So like you could take something like disposable razors.
Sure.
Men were using a razor, straight razor. They used it for years and years and years. It was metal, you know.
Yeah.
Bic came up with this disposable razor, and so that every time you shaved, you'd throw it out and you'd have to buy another one. So
right.
how, and they marketed it as something that was convenient.
Correct.
How is
yeah.
that convenient?
Yeah.
The other one was in your drawer. Now you have to go buy more. And the thing with razors especially, and different items that are combinations of plastic, metal, and, you know, other substances, mm-hmm. they are not remotely recyclable.
Mm.
So they just go straight to the landfill. And there's so many products like that. And I was really kind of shocked, you know, to think, you know, this isn't just about global warming. It's about how we've been marketed, really some bad habits
yeah.
that have benefited a few people at the very top. And we all pay not only the expense of, you know, the landfill and trying to deal with all this stuff, the implications for the planet we're paying for under the guise of it's convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is a lot of people probably don't even think about or don't even know what kind of items are indeed recyclable, which ones aren't. To some degree, I think we all need kind of an education as far as what we should be doing in terms of recycling, because a lot of people, you know, they feel good. Okay, well, you know, I've recycled this and recycled that, not knowing that in some cases, the things that we are so-called recycling aren't as recyclable as we think they are, you know, so.
You know what happened also,
uh-huh.
back when we first started recycling back in the 70s, we knew we had to clean out all of our food stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we knew we had to single stream it. But then there was this period where China was buying all of our garbage.
Mm.
Now, then this is recently. So they said, yeah, throw everything on these barges.
Yeah.
And then it all went over there. And China, I guess, sorted through it somehow. It sounds like a terrible job. And now China doesn't want anymore. They're like, nope, you can keep your own garbage.
Mm.
And here we are trying to backtrack because, number one, you can't have food and stuff that you're recycling. I think a lot of people don't bother to clean out their cans, et cetera. So it goes
okay.
in there. Then that can contaminate other useful things. So in the book, there's a section about what you can recycle and what you can't. But really, the gist of the book, too, mm-hmm. is how to purchase without bringing all this stuff home.
Oh.
And how to get beyond recycling. For instance, it's funny. Another thing with the products that were sold,
mm-hmm.
toothpaste.
Yeah.
Commercial toothpaste actually demineralizes your teeth.
Mm.
It makes you more susceptible to cavities. And things like Listerine, which was originally developed as a floor cleaner by a surgeon named Joseph Lister. That is what we're, you know, people are gargling
with that.
That's
amazing.
Doesn't it feel like a floor cleaner's in your mouth when you're gargling with Listerine?
It's like napalm for your mouth.
It is. So it is napalm. It kills everything in there, including the good little bacteria that keeps your mouth, you know, sort of, what do I want to say? Balanced.
In balance, right.
Yep. So There's, for instance, in there are a couple recipes for mouthwash. Mm-hmm. It's really easy. It is baking soda, distilled water, tea tree oil, and peppermint oil.
Oh yeah,
and it's fantastic. It's so nice. And my brother, unfortunately, is going through some chemotherapy that left like very bad sores in his mouth, and he says that and the toothpaste, which is also very, very simple. Baking soda is a part of that as well. Mm-hmm. Bentonite clay, and then a few other things, but all easy ingredients. He said that really helped his mouth. It restored it. And the couple times I've been to the dentist since I started using the toothpaste and the mouthwash that I make easily, and it's way cheaper, the dentist is like, man, your mouth is good. Like, what's going on?
Wow. You know, but that's really funny because anecdotally, I will tell you that as growing up as a kid, and I didn't understand this at the time, my mom would actually use baking soda as a toothpaste for us.
Mm-hmm.
We would use it all the time. We hated it, though. You know, and we would gargle with it and stuff like that. You know, why can't we just use regular toothpaste like everybody else uses? So she was ahead of the curve. So, you know, now you know.
And that's it. And there's so many things we were doing right, and we can easily go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, plus, it kind of looks cool instead of like these plastic bottles and tubes and stuff. I have these really beautiful little jars, and then like a cool bottle that with a little glass on top of it. And it's just so much more aesthetically pleasing than having all that plastic stuff and cluttering your cupboard and whatnot. Same with cleaning materials. Really, really easy. Vinegar is huge.
Yeah.
Once again, baking soda. You can make a number of things that you would go out and pay $5-6 for. They're very, very simple. And then a lot of the things also have very, very serious toxins in them that over time are absolutely not good for you. And just keep in mind that all that stuff goes down the sink and into our water supply. The book touches on that too. It's just amazing, our actions and the implications just beyond us.
Yeah.
That's a long path out.
Now, in case any of you listening are just joining us, I'm speaking with artist and author Dana Simpson. She's written a book called Come Together Handbook to Retool for the Future. This is UMES 30. I'm Brian Daniels. Now, your book is described as a bottom-up strategy for finding solutions to combat global warming. Now, when you say bottom-up, kind of explain what that means. Basically, you're talking about just individuals, right, coming together and doing the simple little things like we were just discussing.
Absolutely. Or, you know, just each of us. Mm-hmm. So we can, you don't even have to wait for anyone to join you. You can just start. And it's as simple as, you know, like we went out to dinner and we were sitting there and I had extra chicken wings. So they're going to bring me a styrofoam box. I was like, man, I don't really want that. You know, what? And I'm like, well, what else do you have that the leftovers can go in? And so then they wanted to bring out something in plastic. And I said, no, hold on. Do you have just some wax paper? And they said, yeah, sure. So they brought out wax paper. I folded up these few wings and it was fine.
Okay.
Everything was clean, kept it good. And the people sitting on either side of me were like, oh, that's a good idea. You know, because we all sort of know we don't want to take that stuff, single-use plastics that we're just going to transport, a couple miles to our house and then throw out. So it's just bottom-up change. You can also call it grassroots. It's you making the decision to do it a different way, you know, to seek alternatives that will be better.
A lot of people probably, you know, aren't in the habit of even thinking about such things. You know, the restaurant you were talking about, you know, they carry their leftovers home in these styrofoam or plastic containers and things like that. How hard is it, do you think, to try to get people into that mindset? Because I know a lot of people are probably going to be like, well, you know, I'm not going to go through all that trouble.
you can approach it from two different areas. Mm-hmm. Now, one is you as the consumer, when you walk into that restaurant, maybe you're going to choose a restaurant that offers green alternatives. You know, they're not handing out plastic straws, namby-pamby. Right. And, I mean, unfortunately, recently, a lot of restaurants are putting their drinks, and they even had glasses for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. You go in there, and now they're serving their beverages in plastic cups.
Yeah.
Like, what is up with that? So then maybe you'll say to them, oh, man, I really would rather have this Guinness in a glass. I did that because I do not want to drink Guinness in a plastic cup. Thank you very much. But, you know, so there's one thing you can do. And then on the other side of it, you could just think, oh, I'm going out to this great Italian restaurant. They always give me a pile of food, and just bring a container with you. You know, that I know a lot of people maybe don't want to do that, but I bet that there's probably a market for collapsible containers.
Mm.
That's the really cool part about this whole thing. You know, we call it global warming, but I also think I want everyone to think about it as just lightening your footstep.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many cool products and innovations that we can create now. You know, we created the bad ones. We can also create really cool solutions like collapsible containers or, you know, just any number of things.
Okay. So what kind of things can people incorporate into their daily routines at home, going to and from work or whatever, that are pretty easy and something that, you know, they don't really have to think about a whole lot?
I think really when you get up in the morning, just sort of try to be mindful about how you plan your day. So, for instance, if you're going to get in the car and drive, try to do all of your errands. You know, think about the efficiency of it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, can you just take your bike? Or maybe you want to walk. Or I wonder if your neighbor needs something. You know, so you can even pick up something for your neighbor. More of a, it's like a good Samaritan mindset where you know, maybe you pick up things for other people. They're going to do that for you as well.
Okay.
And that just permeates out to the community. And instead of everybody being so isolated and thinking, I'm just going to do this for me, I've got to get this for me, you're just, it really feels good and it's fun. It's kind of like a game. What can I do to, you know, do this a little bit of an alternative way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you pack your lunch, I always make too much dinner so that then I can put it in like a container and I get to have, you know, chili for lunch, which is, I don't like sandwiches, so it's great.
Ah, okay.
You know, so little things, bananas, apples, all of those things, they come with their own containers,
sure,
which is awesome. So it's transportation. It's what you're going to buy.
Mm-hmm.
It's who you're going to support. Like if you're going to order that off Amazon, well, you know. And you actually should check. It's not even necessarily going to be cheaper.
Sure.
But the free shipping, is it? I mean, it's incorporated in the price.
Yes.
And shipping is going up. Cardboard costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And then the garbage from that and all the fossil fuels, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So it's just keeping your eyes wide open, I like to say, and finding the route, your personal route to just start to retool slowly to go in the right direction. That appliance breaks, do you need to throw it out or is it possible to fix it?
Mm.
It's actually kind of cool. There's a whole movement called the Right to Repair movement.
Oh, yes, I've heard that.
So
cool. I've heard that. And in fact, come to think of it, just kind of going off script a little bit.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman who I've watched on YouTube, and what he does, he goes around buying like old Teslas.
Oh my gosh.
And you know, and repairing them on his own. And the funny thing about it is, Tesla has basically tried to tell him to stop doing that.
Oh yeah.
You know, and he's part of this Right to Repair movement, but he does it with Teslas. And I think that's absolutely fascinating. I don't see why not.
Exactly.
You know? Why not?
Well, you know where the Right to Repair movement came from? It was because of the farmers who buy these very expensive John Deere products. Mm. The minute you take up a wrench as a farmer and you decide, oh, I'm just going to knock on the carburetor and get some of this junk off, John Deere is going to say, your warranty is voided.
Right.
Because you were just fooling around with it. And they're like, hey, mm-hmm. I know how to, I can fix this.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Or we should have access to the manuals. We just bought this product and we should be able to work on it. And it was a big thing. It was a big court case.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Apple. Apple was not letting people
yes.
replace the batteries.
I remember that as well.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, come on, people, we just gave you all this money. Now we just want to repair this thing.
Wow. I tell you what. Also, I know in the book you talk a little bit about decluttering
mm-hmm.
your life in general. Could you talk to us a little bit about that?
Well, I guess we're...
I'm terrible. I'm going to admit that right now that I'm really terrible about that.
Well, you're in good company. I mean, it's our house can kind of be pathetic because I have this disease where I keep thinking I'm going to use it.
Yes.
At some point.
I have the same problem.
And I have to kind of learn that, well, actually, I do use it a lot, but, you know, whatever. So with, let's take medications.
Okay.
And I bet you everybody has a cupboard that's just full, full, full. And then I suppose you need to look at the expiration date.
Mm.
My kids were always like, Mom, is that expired? You know, and probably it was. So then you just have these cupboards full of containers and full of stuff
mm-hmm.
that you have to be very careful not to just pour it down the toilet.
Sure.
That stuff goes into the water
yeah.
supply as well. And especially medicines and any kind of chemicals, it's a big deal. So if you can refrain from buying all kinds of stuff and just kind of keep it to a simple baseline
mm-hmm.
And don't overbuy. We're encouraged always to buy like massive containers
yeah.
of everything.
Yeah.
Then you're probably going to have less stuff cluttering your house. And also if you go from, buying all those cleaning supplies, laundry soap is an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Laundry soap's always in all this plastic. There's a million different kinds you can buy. You know what? You can just buy washing soda and borax.
Okay.
They're powdered. They come in cardboard boxes. They're cheap. They do a great job. You know, you just don't need all of the different variations on everything. When I used to take my 86-year-old mom every mm-hmm. month into the Rite Aid because she wanted to buy different medicines, I nearly got a reaction because I was
writing
this book. And it was sort of, she would just stand there trying to figure out what kind of, cranberry pills to take, you know, to help some kind of ailment she was having. And there would be probably 20 different variations.
Wow.
And do we need that? No, we just need one, really.
So how hopeful are you that your book and maybe books like this will actually begin to start a movement and get that momentum going to actually affect change?
I'm very hopeful. And I think, there's a very real thing right now called eco-anxiety that kids have.
Mm.
And sure enough, you know, they have a right to be concerned. You know, I want people to feel empowered right now
mm.
by themselves, that they can affect change. And see, if each of us starts to do that, then that is a huge movement that
mm.
starts. That's bigger than legislation.
Right.
That's us. And once again, we're the ones who got us here.
That being said, as individuals doing things to help the planet, how can we all come together and make that movement even larger and try to push that even further?
Well, I think in starting to do the actions that are in the book
mm-hmm.
and talk with each other and be excited about what you're doing. You know, pat yourself on the back. If you rode your bicycle to work instead of just hopping in the car,
mm-hmm.
you know, tell everybody about it. It's addictive and it's fun to do good things and
mm-hmm.
that are good for the environment and for yourselves.
So have you found that you've attracted a number of people? Have you surrounded yourself with a number of people who are like-minded?
Yeah, I guess I'd say so. Sure. Yeah. I mean, everybody who has gotten the book, it's been nice. They say that, that it's really helped them and they're doing little bits and pieces. And at the end of the book, there's sort of, action journals. So
okay.
you can chronicle your good your good movements forward. And yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, it's you lead and people see, and then people want to do the right thing. I think everybody inherently wants to do the right thing,
mm-hmm.
and they will follow.
Okay.
And then they'll become leaders.
Yeah. See, I love how that works.
Me too. I really love
how that works. Okay, Dana, so how can people find a copy of your book?
Okay, they can go to my website, which is danasimpson.com, and just heads up, there's no P in my name. So it's just Dana and then S-I-M-S-O-N.com. And it's under stationery and books.
Well, I've been speaking with author and activist Dana Simpson about her new book, Come Together, Handbook to Retool for the Future. And Dana, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, and thank you so much for dropping by.
It was wonderful fun, and I loved it too. It's always great to talk with you. Thank you.
Listen to this or any past episode of UMES 30 by logging on to WESM913.org or through the NPR One app available for download on Google Play. UMES 30 is produced in the studios of 91.3 WESM, located on the campus of the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. The views and opinions expressed on UMES 30 are not necessarily those of 91.3 WESM or the University of Maryland Eastern Shore.